I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years. I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, cliques, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we be happy?
Hey, you are listening to The Underground. It's 6 o'clock here at KBOO 90.7 FM. And our show today is on resistance and activism. And now I'm going to hand it over to Garrett.
First up, we have a piece by Hannah interviewing her mother about activism.
My name is Hannah Morrison, and I go to Nair Early College Academy. I'm here today with my mother.
And my name is Charlene Zaharakis. I was born in Portland, Oregon, 57 years ago.
What were you involved with in the 70s?
Well, in the 70s, it was really the 60s and the 70s because of the Vietnam War. I was in high school in 1968 when I first went to a demonstration. And my brother got me involved. He'd been in the Air Force. He'd come home and was against the war. He hadn't been in Vietnam, but he was in the military at the time. So he got me thinking about what the government was doing. The other thing that was happening then is that people were questioning authority. They were questioning the way that we did things. And I was in the heart of it because I was in high school. There were things like the dress code. We could not wear pants. We couldn't wear jeans. They thought that if you wore pants to school as a girl, that you would be more rowdy. And it was things like that that seemed to be discriminatory and kind of stereotyping us. And so as youth, we began to protest those things and question those things that had been the norm and the way that people did things. So there was a lot of resistance from the people in authority, like our principal or teachers or parents and those kind of people. So it was on different levels. There was a national level going on, but also I became active at school to make changes. That was the beginning of it.
How did it really affect you today and back then?
Well, back then, I think I had a passion for making change because my own life wasn't the way that I thought it should be. That when I was growing up, I lived in poverty, and I wanted to make changes. I didn't always have control over how things were when I was growing up. But then when I became a teenager, I had more control. And as an adult, after I turned 18, I had more control. And so I wanted to see change made. And that's how it had an effect on me. And so as I saw things that were wrong, or I thought was wrong or a problem, and I wanted to make a change, I felt more empowered to do that. I saw that there was a way that I didn't have to just accept it, that I, as one person with other people, could organize and make a change. And so things like housing, I worked to form a tenants union in the early 70s. Because people were living in pretty bad situations in terms of what their housing looked like and landlords not making repairs and workers' rights. I worked at Winchell's at one point. My sister and I, we didn't get breaks. We didn't get overtime. And all those things were illegal to do that. We organized with something called Industrial Workers of the World. And I was able to make some change then. In the workplace. It was small things, but they add up. So now, in this time period, what happened is later on, I went back to school and became a nurse. I work as a community health nurse, which put all my skills together, my advocacy for people, together in one package. So that's sort of how I make a change now. So I help people learn how to help themselves and advocate for themselves using resources within the system and make changes in people's lives every day and kind of passing on that power to other people.
So if you can go back, would you change anything?
I think I might have gone to school earlier because I put off going to school. I got a little distracted. And I think that's about the only thing I would have changed, is staying in school. Although I did go back later. Maybe now I have a little more perspective, so I don't know. I don't know if I would have changed anything. I think what's really important is that people know that their lives can change in the moment, that people who are living in poverty or in domestic violence or other situations, they don't have to stay in those. They don't have to be the same, that they can make changes. Just because you were born in poverty or born into a situation that you didn't make, you don't have to stay there, that there are ways out to make it a different world. I like the job I do because it's a chance to start over when somebody has a child. I work with moms and babies, and that's a good time for people to make change. And so that's what I work with moms, is to help them become better parents than their parents were, and to take the good things from their parents and to use those, but also to integrate their own change into how they parent their children. And I think that's how we make a different world. We have to start with the children.
Well, I just want to thank you so much for coming and talking about things that was really important to you.
You are welcome.
That was Hannah and her mother talking about activism in Portland. Next up, a piece by the Young Ladies Radio Project on the psychological effects of punishment versus abuse in children. Young Ladies Radio Project is a radio partnership between KBOO and IRCO.
Most people think that physical punishment is something from the past, but as we know, it is still happening today. Many good parents feel that they should punish their children once in a while, but what is an effective way of managing children?
Will you say your name and what your job is, please?
John McNulty. I'm a teacher and a coach at Madison High School. I teach freshmen through seniors. I've got a master's degree in counseling. I've been a counselor in many different forms since 1981, private practice, drug and alcohol, family, CSD. I was an elementary school counselor for 4 years, and then I've been a teacher for approximately now about 19 years.
What is child abuse?
In my opinion, there's several different types. There's emotional neglect, where if you're a parent, you don't give the kid proper nurturing to become a better person. There's verbal abuse, where you're screaming and yelling at a kid and scaring the hell out of them. There's physical abuse that goes way beyond punishment. It's taking out frustrations. It's hurting somebody that shouldn't be hurt.
What are the main disadvantages of physical punishment to children?
Well, it depends on what type of punishment. If you use physical punishment, as a parent and somebody who's been around it for a while, you end up pushing your kid away.
So how does this negative punishment affect children?
Kids need to know the boundary between what is right and wrong, and a parent needs to know how to establish that boundary between right and wrong. And if that's established early, you know, then a kid will know how far they can go, and a parent actually will know how far the kid will go and how far the parent will go. Punishment is effective when utilized in fair and equal amount, but it has to also be tempered. I mean, if you're going to be putting somebody in, say, timeout, or you're going to be giving them a tongue lash, and you also have to temper that with a little bit of love. Kid wants structure, but a kid also wants love, too, and sometimes they go hand in hand.
When does punishment become child abuse?
When punishment becomes child abuse, when you step over the line, when you verbally, emotionally, or physically damage the kid, you know, a a physical abuse does more emotionally, because the kid's looking at, well, negative punishment is better than no punishment. Okay? Negative attention is better than no attention.
What effects does child abuse have on the child's future?
Oh, God. I mean, studies have shown that if a child is abused at a young age, chances are that they're going to perpetuate that abuse as it gets older and older, and possibly he's going to do the same thing. It can become a generational type of problem. If a kid is abused, they feel like, on one hand, nobody loves me, and on the other hand, this is the only love I will ever know.
My name is Olaf Hassan. I'm going to interview Fatima.
Hi, Olaf.
What is the punishment?
In my culture, punishment would be when a child does something wrong, the parent would like, it's okay to hit as long as the child is protected and the child is not being hit really severely bad.
What difference do you see between Somali culture and American culture when it comes into disciplining children?
I see in American culture, the way of disciplining children is more in communicating with them, or maybe not making them have something they want. In my culture, it's more like the way you do with the child is you can hit them, or you can talk to them in a way that you make them feel bad that what they did is wrong, and by the respect that they had for the parents is different, so it will be more effective.
Can you hit a child? If so, when, what are the results?
The way of hitting a child will not be in a way that makes him feel pain or something. Just to make him sure he did something bad, you cannot hit in the head or leave some marks on the child's body. You just hit him to make them know that what they did is wrong and they shouldn't do it again.
How is transition to a different culture like American?
So when a child from my culture comes here and sees the idea that hitting a child in any way is wrong, he gets the idea that he cannot be hit again. So you see in many houses, a child yells and reacts differently when a parent yells at them or tries to hit them. Those are some differences that I see that is happening in our culture. It's difficult for the parents is because they take it as a disrespect from the children. Well, actually, the child sees another children doing that, and it's okay. There are some difficulties between that.
Thank you, Fatima. Have a nice day.
You too.
Can you introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Julia.
What's your job? What do you do for life?
I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have 4 kids and a husband.
What is child abuse?
Child abuse is when the child is being, I would say, hit or kicked or, you know, something when it's done in anger and, I would say, physical or mental.
What are the main disadvantages of physical punishment to children?
I would say the main disadvantages would be if the punishment is done in anger and an abusive way. If it's done wrong, that would be a disadvantage, in my opinion.
Would you like to introduce yourself first?
And this is Tamisha Wilson with Department of Human Services.
What is your job?
I'm a social service specialist.
How do you define child abuse and punishment?
We don't have a set definition. Child abuse comes in many different forms: physical, verbal, sexual, psychological, and if you're referring to physical punishment, if a mark is left, and it depending on the age of the child, really depends on if that would qualify as abuse to that certain child. There's a lot of factors that play into that, and so there's not a definite or definitive description of it.
How do you think the negative punishment affects children?
Children need discipline, and oftentimes punishment is a little extreme, although necessary. But there are many forms of punishment that work better than physical punishment. loss of privileges or making them do extra chores or allowing them to even set their own punishment sometimes helps better than a physical punishment.
Okay. How does physical punishment will affect future child's life? Is it cyclical? Will they do the same on their own children?
It depends. Most often people choose to take things that they appreciated learning from their parents and passing that on to their children. Sometimes the things that they didn't like, they don't integrate that into their parenting style. But most oftentimes, new parents tend to rely on advice, you know, from the people that they know and trust. We don't see a lot of cycles. Sometimes, you know, people do fall into a cycle that their parents did if it was negative, but a lot of the times they don't. And so it just depends on the situation and what advantages that person has had.
Okay. What is the proper balance of punishment what parents can use to have a positive effect on the child's life?
Asking a lot of questions, getting advice, you know, from people who know, and taking that in, using that, they feel would be an appropriate punishment. I advise them to go with what is recommended by professionals.
Okay, thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
The Young Ladies Radio Project is a production of KBOO and the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization, IRCO.
That studies science, technology, engineering, and math.
As it affects us, our world, and the life of the people around us.
The views of this program are strictly that of the individuals interviewed.
Are not representatives of IRCO or as a organization.
Next up, a field recording by youth advocate Aaron Yankee at Rosa Parks Elementary School.
KBOO Youth Collective was invited to Rosa Parks Elementary School to record their after-school writers group. We first hear from their teachers, Walida Imarisha and Taria Autry.
My name's Walida Imarisha, and I'm working with Community of Writers, and we are working here at Rosa Parks Elementary School, working with fourth graders in their writers club.
Hi, my name is Taria Autry, and I've been working with Community of Writers for close to a decade, I think, now, and this year they're doing this amazing project with Rosa Parks Elementary School that involves writers coming in during the day and working with classes, as well as what we're doing, which is coming in twice a week after school, working with small groups doing writers' clubs.
It's been half a year, and we're having a great time, and we get to work with the kids until June, and it's an amazing opportunity that was gotten through a grant that Portland Public Schools and Community of Writers did.
The first quarter, we put together a zine of their writings, and then this quarter, we're doing the radio work with you. Thank you so much for coming in. And then next quarter, actually, we're looking to do another zine, and there's been a huge crowd roar about doing comic books. Also, we'll be doing a community performance in spring as well for the wider community, and we've been doing write nights as well once a term so that parents can come in with their students, and that's open to anyone at the school. They come in and can write as a family, which is really exciting.
The students have done amazing work, and they've come so far, and they've done so much, and they were so excited to be on the radio, so we appreciate you guys coming in, and we appreciate folks listening to them and hearing their powerful voices.
Hi, my name is Jose. The poem I'm reading is about Martin Luther King Jr. The music back then is Martin Luther King Jr. talking about laws. He looks worried before his speech. A school band is painting the drums. A DJ is hearing the speech. Firefighters are squirting water at people whose skin is brown. Firefighters are squirting water at innocents. It feels like you're getting pushed and people are fighting for rights.
Hello, my name is Lele. Today I'm going to read you a poem named Gift of My Fingers. Gift of my fingers circle in the electric wind. At times everybody is sleeping. My hands automatically stop because of very cold, icy mountains. And as I travel, I feel like a blasting volcano is shooting out with magma and lava. I imagine lava that looks like blood that comes out of rocks, steaming into houses, streets, apartments, hospitals, and into people's lives. As I see the lava and the world starts to break into pieces of rocks.
My name is Jacob, and this is a poem, My Baby Sister. It's a fun time. My sister's coming, and I didn't go to school for 3 days straight. This is my fourth. We already set up her crib and playpen, and now I can feel what it's like to have a sister. Now it's time to welcome Johanna to her own house. We have a new baby. She's a little baby. She doesn't open her eyes that much. We're excited to see her. She can open her eyes wide open. She gets really hyper when we play with her. My life has changed. She's my first sister. I really love her, and I think she's going to be a beautiful sister. I'm asleep in a car coming home from the hospital. I'm going to see my older brother. He's going to look out for me. He's going to play with me. We're going to love each other forever and ever.
Hello, my name is Hilary Sandoval Juarez. My story name is Jamie's Uniform. The uniform smells clean. It is as blue as a delicious raspberry. It feels smooth like a blanket with fur. It reminds me of her helping other people who are sick. She likes to help people, and her wearing her uniform lets people know she is training for a nurse. She stays in school all week. I only see her on the weekends. She has curly hair. She is very pretty. She looks like a real nurse already trained.
If you are a jerk, don't be one. Do you think you're perfect? You're not. Be nice to everyone. Help little kids out too. Make new friends. Remember, don't hate, appreciate. Try to be a good person. You could be a superstar. Be nice. If you are a liar, you better stop now. If you lie a lot, then you tell the truth. The person you are telling it to might not believe you, so don't lie. Are you nice all the time and you smile? Keep up the good work. But if something gets in your way and you start talking back, wipe your sleeves. Calm down. Don't let something crazy get in the way. Get over it. You will become popular too. By Asia Hill McNeil.
My name is Anna, and my poem is When I Grow. When I grow up, I want to be a doctor. I want to help people with their health. I want to help them pay their medicine and, most important, with their sickness. Lots of people will one day thank me for helping all of them.
A poem for my mom, Amara. My mom wears jewelry all day long, rings, necklaces, and earrings. It smells like Victoria's Secret perfume, and a very special ring came from her mother, and people always ask her, where did you get all of it? She says, it's a secret. She says, I get it from a special jewelry place. And she never wears silver, only gold. And when she wears it, her jewelry, she is as pretty as the sun.
For more information about the program, visit www.communityofwriters.com. For the KBOO Youth Collective, this is Erin Yankee, KBOO Youth Advocate.
Next, Annie takes a short discourse on the Black Power movement of the late 1960s and tells us what it was all about.
Who taught you to hate the texture of your hair? Who taught you to hate the color of your skin to such extent that you bleach to get like the white man? Who taught you to hate the shape of your nose and the shape of your lips? Who taught you to hate yourself from the top of your head to the soles of your feet? Who taught you to hate your own kind? Who taught you to hate the race that you belong to? So much so that you don't want to be around each other. No, before you come asking Mr. Muhammad, does he teach hate? You should ask who yourself, who taught you to hate being what God gave you.
Thank you.
just an afternoon stand.
There's a cross for you to bear,
things to go through if you're going anywhere.
The civil rights movement of the 1960s is one of the most celebrated periods of American history. In the wake of 1954's Brown v. Board of Education, the movement mobilized people of color across the nation, and leaders such as Martin Luther King Jr. spoke to the whole country and preached nonviolent equality. The New Deal reigned in an era of federal committees and programs to benefit Americans, but more often than not, these benefits did not apply to blacks. Even the GI Bill frequently cheated black veterans out of what they were promised. President Lyndon B. Johnson sought to enforce the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments that had been oppressed for decades after their ratification by Jim Crow laws and still generally racist attitudes held by whites in the South and even in the North. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 and Voting Rights Act of 1965 are considered the hallmarks of the Civil Rights Movement. Less recognized, though arguably equally significant, was the Black Power Movement, born in June of 1966. Led by figures such as Stokely Carmichael of the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, Malcolm X of the Nation of Islam, and Huey P. Newton and Bobby Seale, founders of the Black Panther Party, Black Power subscribed to the tenet of civil rights by any means necessary and with all deliberate speed. Their interests lay in the empowerment of the black community through cultural heritage, pride, and nationalism. The Black Panther Party, who originally formed in the racially dissonant Oakland area, armed themselves with guns and constitutions to protect their neighborhoods from police brutality and condoned violence when necessary, a marked distinction from civil rights groups from a previous generation. Black Power had many different schools of thought. There were numerous groups that believed in black separatism, neo-Garveyism, and black supremacy, to name a few. The general ideology that most black power groups held was racial pride, black autonomy, and the creation of black political and cultural institutions that would fight for the advancement of black collective interests. Black power enabled black studies programs at many colleges, encouraged the election of black politicians, and raised the pride and esteem that was often lacking in African Americans collectively. Although black power often neglected the interests of feminism, it later allowed for a reactionary movement and criticism of black power in what came to be black feminism. Though this movement proved to have a number of flaws, its impact on American racial politics is undeniable, and its audacity ought to be recognized just as much as its more peaceful and idealized predecessor. All right, that was a piece by me, Annie. And up next, we have a piece by Zoe, and she's going to read it live.
Hey, this is Zoe. I wrote up a piece about the Saving the Rainforest, so here it is. Any wonderful animal. The rainforest is not only home to many wonderful animals, but also wonderful plants. Rainforest plants have already provided lots of evidence of their potential with remedies for all sorts of medical problems. From childhood leukemia to toothaches, 70% of the plants identified as having anti-cancer characteristics by the U.S. National Cancer Institute are found only in the tropical rainforest. Destroying the rainforest also means destroying people. Though in my book, saving land and animals is enough. If that's not enough for you, think about saving yourself. What if cancer runs in your family? What if you get it, but by the time it is brought to your attention, there's not enough rainforest? I googled how many animals are being killed each year, hoping to find something out about what killing the rainforest was doing. The results were devastating. 100 species in the rainforest are killed each day, and 9,021 animals are killed each day on average by rainforest deforestation. If you could save even one animal a day, wouldn't you feel better? By helping save the rainforest, you can not only help animals, but plants and people as well. I know what you're thinking. I don't have enough kind of money for that, save that kind of land. Well, I know a way that's free. Go to www.therainforest.com. And click the Remember to Click link that brings you to a big green button. Then just click it. They're counting clicks, and every click is saving more rainforest. Click every day. I just saved 11.4 square feet of rainforest. I know that I'm helping. So once again, that website was www.therainforest.com. Thanks.
This is Katrina, and I'm here with Lisa Gilley, a local activist, and we're talking about activism. Welcome to KABU, Lisa.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And how would you describe activism?
Activism to me is going beyond your beliefs and taking action, standing up for what you believe is right. And it can be as simple as recycling or taking your own cloth bags to the grocery store, or as intense as protesting in the streets.
When did you first learn about activism?
In the late 1960s. The civil rights movement was peaking at that time, and Martin Luther King Jr. had been assassinated. Also, the Vietnam War was continuing, and more people began to speak out and protest against our involvement there, especially college students.
How did they protest?
Well, they staged protests, carrying signs, speaking out against the war, and they also had what they called sit-ins, where they would take over a building and stay until someone listened to try to get media attention to get the word out to the country that, hey, what was going on was wrong. Most of these happen at colleges and universities. And during one protest at Kent State University in Ohio, four unarmed students were shot and killed by Ohio State National Guardsmen.
Wow, you know a lot about activism and protests. Did you protest?
Yes, I did. In the spring of 1970, I was 18 and I was a senior in high school.
What was the protest like?
Well, one evening I went into Portland to join students at Portland State University. We barricaded the streets near the university to protest, and we also held a sit-in inside one of the buildings. It was mostly peaceful, except at one point, a city garbage truck rammed through one of the barricades. Luckily, no one was hurt. And during the day, however, while I was not there, police did use their batons on the protesters.
Have you protested against the war in Iraq?
No, I have not. I do foster care now, and I knew that I couldn't risk injury or arrest while I was responsible for the care of a child. But I did vote for John Kerry in 2004 and Barack Obama in 2008 and helped some young people register to vote in this last election.
What do you recommend to young people who want to become activists?
Well, first of all, it's really important to care about your world and the people in it. Not just caring about yourself, but looking outward to others. Secondly, it's very important to become informed, not just from mainstream TV, radio, or the newspapers, which absolutely do not tell all of the truth of situations like Vietnam or Iraq. Listen to stations like KBOO and NPR. Read some non-stream newspapers and magazines like the Utney Reader. Get involved in your community with like-minded people to effect positive changes. Your one voice does have power and meaning, and that power can grow when you join with others.
And do you have anything else you'd like to say?
All right, that was a piece by Katrina, and she interviewed Lisa, who talked about her days doing activism work. And up next, we have a piece by Zoe Ace, and she interviews people who are both self-employed and work at an office to see what the difference is and how they feel about their jobs.
The theme for this month's Underground show was activism and resistance. At first, my piece started out as resisting the man, which turned into interviewing someone who worked in an office building and interviewing someone who owned their own business. The point was to compare how people felt about their jobs and how they felt about their lifestyle relating to their jobs. And this is what I came up with.
My name is Steve Kane. I'm 27. I live in the Ukrainian village in Chicago. And I work for a marketing company.
Okay, Well, you went to Columbia College in Chicago, right?
Yeah, I actually went twice. Like, I went originally for music business, and then I took some time off because I realized it wasn't really what I wanted to do. And I went back for journalism and finished, like, a year of that. So I actually still have, like, to go back, technically. I mean, to finish my degree, I still have, like, another year and a half left or so.
Why did you go back for journalism?
It's kind of one of those things where my mom is actually a journalism teacher at a high school, or she was. I don't know, I just kind of had always been a decent writer. I'd always written, I'd always kept journals, I'd always, you know, wrote poetry, I'd always... I mean, when I was in high school, I did a zine for my entire, you know, high school career, where I would just talk about, like, punk bands and things like that. So I figured that, you know, considering I was doing this anyway, it was something that would be a good fit for me. And it was. I mean, I was, you know, good at... I was a good journalism student, you know.
How did you end up getting the job that you have now?
I had quit my other job, and I didn't have one. My friend Drew had told me that his company was hiring, and, you know, he kind of gave me the rundown on the job, and so I kind of got hired that way.
How long have you been working there?
It'll be 2 years in June, so it's been a while.
What's your favorite part of your job?
There's a lot of diversity, and there's also a lot of people who are involved in other things. So it's kind of a great place to work, because there are people there who are musicians, there are people there who are, like, comedians and actors, and, like, they do improv, and there's, like, writers there, and there are people who write plays, and, like, so there's a lot of creativity there, and I think that's a cool thing for, like, a young company to have. It's cool being able to, like, walk into a place and, like, and work with a lot of your friends and, like, you know, have a really good rapport with all of your coworkers and things like that.
What's your least favorite part of your job?
It's a really repetitious job. So you basically do the same thing every day, all day. I've been, you know, it's kind of one of the things where I always wanted a job that I feel, like, personal satisfaction with, and I can't always say that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Things could always be better, I think, that's anyone's life, you know.
What would be your ideal job?
Kind of one of those things where I think about this all the time now. Especially, like, the older I get, the more I think about it. Because, when I was a kid, I never really wanted to be anything. Like, I never really thought about it. If it were feasible and I could pay my rent and, like, live a fairly comfortable life, if it was possible to just be in a band and, like, do that full-time, I probably would, because that seems to be the only thing that, like, I've consistently enjoyed, because I've never had to do it as my full-time job, so mm-hmm. I guess I don't really know. Right now, it's still, like, appealing enough to where that seems like a really fun way to live.
Does your work schedule affect, like, other aspects of your life, like hanging out with friends or, like, going on vacation or anything?
You know, not really at all. Actually, that is a really good perk of my job, too, is that, like, when my roommate's band, my friends, Too Sweet, went on tour last year, they did some dates with their band, Fire Gold. It, like, basically, I just, you know, let my work know, and then I had vacation time saved up, and I was able to do that. I was gone for, like, 10 days, I think, 7 days. And, you know, it didn't matter. They're really cool about stuff like that, like, because there's so many people that are involved in things, like, you know, my friend Drew that got me the job, he's in two bands, and, you know, he'll go on tour with other bands, and they're, like, really cool with that, you know, within reason, you know.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to drop your blog spot?
Yeah, I have a music blog called Harsh Distractions. It's harshdistractions.blogspot.com, and I have a personal blog. And it's Stephen, StephenKane.blogspot.com. Kane's K-A-N-E. And that's what I do when I'm at work. I mean, they let me update my blog while I'm at work all day if I want.
So that's awesome.
That's kind of awesome.
My first question is, who are you and what do you do?
My name is Jenny Wells, and I have a glass studio called Jennifer Wells Design. I teach people in the community how to make glass by fusing it in a kiln and cutting it and all that stuff. I also make my own art.
Do you enjoy owning your own business?
Yes, I do enjoy owning my own business. It's a lot of work, a lot more work than I realized it ever would be, but it's really fun being your own boss and setting your own schedule and getting to dictate all of what happens in your business.
Okay, does it make it easier or harder to take, like, vacations and stuff?
Well, I can certainly plan classes around when I have my vacations and things like that. It can be hard, though, because then if you're gone, you're not making money for the business, so that part is difficult. So you have to kind of plan ahead to save money and make sure that there is going to be enough income while you're gone to cover all of your expenses.
How long did it take to start everything?
Well, I started working on it, on the business plan in the summer, and it took me, I just had never written a business plan before, so that took me just figuring that out. But the Small Business Association had all sorts of models for business plans, so I kind of used some of theirs and wrote my business plan. And then we were fortunate to own a house, so I took out a loan, second mortgage on our house.
What are your favorite and least favorite parts of owning?
My favorite part is definitely that I get to create all that happens in the business, and I get to meet a lot of really great people in the community because they come in and take classes, so that's really, really fun. I feel like I get to know lots and lots of people in the community, and I get to work in schools. Probably the least favorite part is all of the money and organizational parts of the business, because organization has never been my strong point since I'm an artist. So trying to stay organized with all the finances and paying taxes and that sort of thing, that can be a real pain. So, and if you don't stay on top of it, then you owe a whole lot of money. So I've gotten better about that now that it's almost the third year in business. My website is jenniferwellsdesign.com. And my address is 1614 Northeast Alberta, and my phone number is 503-750-4921.
All right, just in case you tuned in recently, you are listening to The Underground, which is the Youth Public Affairs Show on KBOO 90.7 FM. And our show this month is about resistance and activism. And you just heard a piece by Zoe Ace interviewing a couple of people about the differences of being self-employed and being and working in an office. Up next, we have an interview by Marina with Miria Medina. So let's listen to that.
Hello, this is Marina, and I interviewed Maria Medina, the program director for Beats for Peace, an American Friends Service Committee-sponsored youth group. A Portland native, Maria began her career teaching art classes at various youth groups and camps. She has since worked at the Rock and Roll Camp for Girls and worked and organized for Oregon Action, a nonprofit that works on campaigns to advance social, economic, and racial justice. She started at the American Friends Service Committee as an intern with Beats for Peace and has been program director for a year. So tell us about Beats for Peace and the work you do with the kids.
Well, Beats for Peace is a youth arts and activism program, and we mainly focus on urban arts, and we basically create art in response to social justice issues of injustice and various types of oppression, and basically build events and art pieces. And we also have a youth-led zine called United Voices.
Have you seen changes in the kids after joining the youth group?
I think I have, especially lately, because I think right now there's a 12-year-old and a 13-year-old. So we have some younger youth members in the group right now. So I would say it's been interesting to see them grow into developing activists and actually having a response, a bigger response in, I think, creating social change. And especially some of the younger kids recently, now that everyone's kind of banding together to get the zine done and finished on a timeline, I've seen everyone in the group step up. And I think it's the first time that I've actually noticed the amounts of energy being put into everything. I don't know. It's really beautiful because, kids go from not caring to caring a whole bunch. And that's good.
Why is activism important for youth?
Well, I guess that depends on how you, I guess, describe activism. But for me, it's just doing something about something you don't like in the world. So even if you don't like people slamming your door and you put like a door stop in there so that it doesn't slam. So it's like doing something proactive to kind of change reality. And I think that's what like activism is to me, is just like doing something about the things that I don't like. And so I really get a big kick out of seeing youth have an opinion and doing something about their future, and they are the future, and hanging out with kids all the time. You get to be a big kid. It's great fun. And it's also, I think, developing good leadership in all of the youth involved and all youth who do activism. I think you have to be some sort of leader to be able to take worldly issues on as a kid. So props to youth activists. Woo woo.
What do you see happening in the future with Beats for Peace?
Well, I know in the near future, we will be having a spring zine, Spring 09, and I'm really excited about it. The theme is kind of like youth speaking out, and kind of it's kind of a variety magazine, which is different than what we've done in the past. Usually there's like an issue or a topic, and so all of the youth submissions are about that topic or subject. And this time it's kind of just young people saying whatever they have to say about the world, and I'm really excited about it. There's some great works in there, and that's one thing that I'm looking forward to and like waiting to see grow, seeing people's response when they pick up the zine and find out that it is youth led and youth created and youth edited. It's a pretty big deal, and it's all in color and glossy. So I'm really looking forward to that in the future of Beats for Peace.
Do you have any advice for adults on how to engage youth in activism?
Well, I would say one thing is like in the activist community and in peace communities, there's like a whole nother language. So I would say when you're talking to kids, like speak plain English and try to hit them at a level that they care about. And I think that, you know, the way that Beats for Peace works is that we use like, you know, hip hop and we use, you know, graffiti and various forms of art to be able to like talk to kids about youth and militarism or war or the peace movement and those kinds of things. So I would say just like find something that kids like to do and then use that as a vehicle to speak with the young.
Is there anything else you wanted to add?
I think I would just like to add that we would like everyone in the community and all young people to come to the Beats for Peace zine release party that is going to be on April 4th from 5 to 8 p.m. at Audio Cinema. And Audio Cinema's address is 226 Southeast Madison, right under the Hawthorne Bridge. And we're going to be having some youth performances and youth speakers and all of the zines your heart could ever want. It's a fundraiser. The event is free, but we are having a raffle, and we are raffling off zine bundles and trying to get folks to buy bundles of zines. So I think one thing that's really exciting is the way that like we're bundling the zines so that someone can donate $5. And for that donation of $5, that means that three young people will be able to have a free zine. I think that's really cool. It's a good reason to come. And also because we're going to have some really great music. We're going to have live performances by Thavius Beck, Cancer the Kid, Spamtron, DJ Grimrock, and the Gummy Cub Crew, which is like a group of little kids that rap and sing, and I make their beats. So yeah, it's pretty dope. But again, Beats for Peace zine release at Audio Cinema on April 4th from 5 to 8, 226 Southeast Madison Street under the Hawthorne Bridge.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right. To learn more about Beats for Peace, visit www.afsc.org and search Beats for Peace. Or you can check out their MySpace, which is myspace.com/whited voices. Yeah. And up next, we have a piece by Kim, and she's going to talk about resisting common knowledge.
Hello, my name is Kim Coffle, and this evening I'm going to be dictating about resisting common knowledge. More specifically, resisting common knowledge that washing my hands is really necessary. Many people I've conversed with believe that washing your hands is simply not needed. My first reaction to this, of course, is to be disgusted, but it got me thinking. Are the risks of not bothering to sterilize my digits and palms really that nasty? I searched the deep chasms of my brain, but the only answers I could dig up were vague taglines that I've been brainwashed to recite ever since I was a child. Catchphrases such as, you'll get sick, or spread disease to others. But I had no answers as to how you'll get sick, what diseases you'll spread, or how high the risk truly is. I'm joined now by,
I'm Dr. Coco. What's up, dear? It's very nice to meet you.
It's very nice to meet you, Mrs. Coco. First question is, ever since I was in adults have been emphasizing how important it is to wash my hands before meals and after using the restroom.
Oh, yes, 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 it's very true.
I would like to hear your perspective on when and why I should wash my hands.
You should always wash your hands. All the time.
You
should wash your hands, before you eat breakfast, before you eat lunch, and before your dinner, before you go to bed, after you shake hands with somebody. After you go to the bathroom.
What about when you sneeze?
After you sneeze. Yes, very much. So.
Always use gloves. That's a good one.
Always use gloves. Every time. All the time.
Could you give specific examples of what could happen if I do not wash my hands?
You'll die.
What are the odds of those occurring?
One in one. One out of one.
I'll die all the time if I don't wash my hands.
See, see. That's it.
Wow, that's pretty intense.
Okay, I will Google it. Okay, you need to wash your hands when you touch your eyes. You pick up germs from other sources and then you infect yourself when you touch animals or animal waste, when your hands are dirty, and more frequently when someone is sick in your home. Oh, I will tell you the correct way to wash your hands. First, wet your hands and apply liquid or clean bar soap. Place the bar soap on a rack and allow it to drain. Next, rub your hands vigorously together, scrubbing all surfaces. Continue for 10 to 15 seconds or about the length of a little tune. That's the hand washing song. And then rinse your hands very well and dry them. It is estimated that 1 out of 3 people do not wash their hands after using the restroom. So these tips are also important when you're out in public. Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, and P.S. Washing your hands regularly can save a lot of money from your medical bills because it costs less than a penny. You could say that this is a penny's worth of prevention can save you $50 visiting the doctor. That's a true fact.
Interesting.
Yes, Cece.
But I've heard that washing your hands with antibacterial soap causes super viruses.
This is true.
Could you please explain what a super virus actually is so that listeners know what you're talking about?
Well, when you wash your hands with antibacterial soap, it kills 99.9% of germs, and so that 0.01 germs that is not killed, that's a super germ! And, I don't know, it doesn't get killed, so it's very bad because it's immune to whatever you wash your hands with.
Kind of like cockroaches.
See.
And then it becomes a super virus that kills you.
It becomes a super virus that is not killed by antibiotic soap.
In fact, I think that's how the plague started.
In fact, the Black Plague was because people did not wash their hands. They didn't even have soap. Oh, look at this. When you do not wash your hands, germs will spread all over your hands. Once germs invade your body, they gobble up nutrients and energy and produce toxins, which are poisons. These toxins can produce symptoms of common infections like fevers, sniffles, rashes, coughing, vomiting, and diarrhea.
In public places, we all see the signs on the walls inside the bathroom that say, like, you know, wash your hands.
Yes, I see them. I'm not blind. I wear glasses, like, I can see.
Complete with directions, too. So. Why did people decide it was mandatory to wash your hands for public places?
Because it's common sense.
Yeah, but if it's common sense, then why do people need to be told all the time?
Because people are stupid.
Oh, what if there's no soap in the bathroom? Is it still worth it to try and wash your hands even though you're just using water?
Sissy, you can drown the germs.
Drown them?
Sissy.
Are women more susceptible to diseases from not washing their hands than men?
No.
Why?
Because, they're the same in susceptibleness of the diseases. Yes. Yes.
Interesting.
Yes, it is.
That's all the questions I have for today.
Oh, thank you. I was very bored. Hello again, hello.
Just so you guys know, you probably should not listen to any medical advice we just gave out because Dr. Coco is not a physician, neither am I.
I am a physician!
Don't listen to anything we say, do not follow anything we do except for wash your hands. That's the only advice we can give out.
I went to UCLA. Banana slugs, go!
All right, that was Kim Coffle for the KBU Youth Collective. And up next, we have a piece by Girls, Inc. That we were supposed to play last month, but we didn't have enough time. So here it is.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is KBU Radio, FM 90.7. I am Bree.
Hi, my name is Zinya.
My name is Sasha.
Hi, I'm Alana.
Hi, my name is Kristen Robinson. I've been with Girls, Inc. for 3 years now.
I've been going for, I think, since December, the beginning of December.
Just 2 weeks now. Yeah.
I've been going since it started September.
Girls Incorporated is a group of girls where you just go in and you usually just talk about your feelings, and we do a whole bunch of games and express how we're doing in school, and we do activities on the economy and things like that. My favorite part is where we get to express our feelings and, you know, who we like and who we don't like and solve problems, and how we just get to spend time with old homes and friends and meet new people and things like that.
The reason why I like Girls, Inc. is because there's so many different people in it that I don't know. Some of them I haven't been comfortable with, and I didn't know, like, really who they were and everything. But now that I've been going to it, I feel better about myself around them, and I feel more comfortable. I like that. Instead of, like, doing educational things and, like, learning that afterwards, like, after we learn all this stuff and it's all jammed into our brains, we don't have to associate school with all this work. It can just be a time for fun and for play, and you don't have to go to home afterwards, and you just have a place where you can be with your friends, and it's a fun environment.
Girls Incorporated is a group where girls can get together and talk about their feelings and talk about, like, the outside world and, like, the real world when we get older and stuff.
Well, I'll say we talk about, like, anything, like, been going on in our lives. Like, we could tell people our secrets and stuff.
Hey, sorry we didn't have enough time to finish that. Thank you for listening to The Underground. The Underground is hosted every fourth Wednesday by the KBU Youth Collective. We meet every Wednesday at KBU at 6 p.m. to plan our show. If you're interested in getting involved, come on down or call our youth advocate, Aaron Yankee, at 503 231-8032, extension 221, or email advocate@kbu.org. We also do a music show, Youth Randomonian, the last Friday of every month from 10 to midnight. We're always looking for music by anyone under 21 of any style. And check out our website at kbuyouth.org. Next up is Hard Knock Radio with David D. Thanks for listening.